Hi, this is Betsy Beers. I'm the executive producer of Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, and How to Get Away with Murder. And this is Shondaland Revealed, the official podcast for the night that we like to call TGIT. We're here to talk about the big, massive season finale for How to Get Away with Murder. And if you are like me, I mean, I know that when I read these scripts, the table read, I was shocked. Then you watch the episodes, it's shocked. And what the hell is going on? And to answer those questions, or actually not answer those questions, a woman who is key to the season finale and the entire plot of this season, because God, so much stuff's happened to you this season, is the beautiful and talented and lovely Carla Souza, who plays Laurel, of course, Castillo, on our fine television show. And thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you.
She just told me that actually she had to reschedule a CNN interview to come talk to me, which I find high freaking hysterical. So take that, Jake Tapper.
This is much better.
See? Like, so friendly. It's an office. There's a fuzzy pillow.
Yeah.
It's like all good. There's a strange
stuffed animal. Yeah.
There's a stuffed animal that, whose name is Bucky, who is kind of frightening and weird. Looks a little like a ferret, but it's a really good test as to whether or not anybody's paying attention.
So for any of
you guys, and you like immediately Carla walks in and she goes, "What the hell is that? And why is it staring at me?" Which is pretty awesome. Maybe have we taken a picture of Bucky before? We're going to do that. Now, Carla today looks amazing. You are wearing a silky blouse with sort of a kind of light frill, a very sort of like, what would you call this sort of
frilly thing? I would call this like Shakespearean type kind of sleeves.
Yes.
You know, don't they feel very Shakespeare's Globe kind of thing?
They kind of do. And you're also wearing a little choker.
Well, it's part of the shirt.
Holy crap,
you
guys. I know. Okay, yeah. So hold on. This whole shirt thing has a V-neck, and yet it's got another piece which masks the sleeves, which I thought was a choker, but it's attached. That is so cool, and it's white silk, and it's super pretty. And you're wearing a pair of black pants, and maybe my favorite shoes ever.
They're Pomeranian-looking sort of slippers that they look.
They're kind of
super comfortable.
They actually look like shoes in the front.
Yeah.
They have a tiger, a big embroidery chunk of tiger, and then the back has fur that does look a little bit like a Pomeranian lint. His coat,
yes.
Your shoes.
Yes, it's fake. Don't worry.
It's fake.
And it's like a pantufla. It's like a slipper, like a slipper that you wear at home, but I can wear it out.
And so you wear this out, and then when you have to do interviews and stuff, you put on fancy shoes.
I just put on the fancy shoes, and then I can not hurt my back and my knees and my feet while I walk around all day long.
That, I think, we've talked about this in terms of Olivia Pope on Scandal, but I think one of the hardest jobs you guys actually have is wearing shoes. Like, technically, how the hell you people truck down streets in shoes like that, I have no idea. So every once in a while, I just want the dudes to have to wear like high heels.
Yeah, but not even, because it's the thing is, it's not vanity. Some people just tell me, well, you don't have to wear makeup or you don't have to. It's not about, it's when you realize that a system works only for the women that do play the game and that don't have an option to not do the other. It's like, oh, sure, I don't have to wear makeup and wear high heels, but then you will never see me get another job and I won't be able to actually, you know, do what I love, unfortunately.
See?
You know, so it's playing, it's unfortunately playing a game until we can then be game changers and, like Alicia Keys say, you know, I don't want to wear makeup always. I want to be able to go to an event or do a photo shoot with no makeup on. And in Cannes, a girl decided that she didn't want to wear high heels and she wasn't allowed on the red carpet.
I remember that.
We laugh, but it's true.
I'm trying to remember who it was wearing flats and got...
She got stopped.
Tossed off.
Tossed off the red carpet.
Dude, that's so hardcore.
Yeah. So there's still a long, long way to go.
There is. There's got to be a movement afoot. Well, I'm benefiting from your fancy outfit, which is terrific. And as a woman who's wearing no makeup, a baggy sweater, and a pair of ill-fitting jeans, which, by the way, just for the record, I sat on an M&M earlier.
No.
That was a mistake. Yeah, I'm so, like, that's how nice I look. Carla looks, like, ready for action and to do actor battle.
You look like someone who isn't hired because of their appearance and can just focus on her talent and her abilities.
It's a really nice way for saying my hair is dirty, you guys.
No,
it's fine. And I'm all for it.
It's enviable.
I'm all for it. And I think every point you're making is absolutely valid,
right.
And we've had this conversation internally before. And
right. Actually,
just for the record, we were auditioning somebody today for a pilot that we're doing. The gentleman who created the show, who's lovely, Paul Davies, who's a wonderful writer, and we loved her audition, and we both said, I wonder if she would come in and not wear any makeup, because to me, all I could see was the makeup, and I'm now so used to trying to just see the performance, and we were having an earlier conversation about hair that... like how crazy it gets. Like, how do I wear my hair? And what am I saying politically? It's just nut job. So this lovely actress who's really, really good, I'm going to make her come back in with about a quarter of stuff on her face because I feel like it's a pressure.
Yeah, and it's distracting. When I moved from London, from auditioning in London to start auditioning in Mexico, the shock for me was in London, you go to auditions with no makeup on.
Right.
And almost all blacks so that way you can be...
Anybody.
Anybody. And then I go to Mexico and they're wearing, you know, all these, you know, high heels, so much makeup, their hair is done. And it was such a culture shock for me. It shows you what the culture values in women, like specifically, and where they're putting their value in. And I've had auditions where, you know, it's a thing. Like I even have to think like, is this a makeup audition? Is this a not makeup? It's such a, where I doubt guys ever have to think, is this a makeup audition? You know, like, why am I even distracting myself?
I know.
You know, thinking about that when it's about, in my head, it should be always about the work, but unfortunately, we haven't gotten to that place yet.
Well, and I actually think about, and I swear you guys, we will talk about the show, but this is so much more interesting right
people.
Now, and then it's going to be, we'll talk about the show. I remember your audition for us because we made you play like 8 parts. So we knew we wanted to cast her. We just weren't sure exactly which part was right because you killed all the parts.
One was the judge.
One was...
I'm kidding.
That'd be really
the police woman. No.
Exactly. But I remember you came in with a pair of glasses. You had like a bunch of different... And you had a really neutral look, which was much more what we're used to.
Right.
Because we could kind of... And that let us see you as anything.
Right. I brought in, I think it was a hoodie, glasses, and a sweater that kind of was more Michaela-y. So I took off the sweater for that. Laurel had the glasses and then... Rebecca had the hoodie because I just needed that sort of physicality.
I told you guys, she literally, with the exception of Annalise Keating, I think you actually auditioned for everyone on the show. Oh, and Bonnie. We could have thrown that in,
too. I know,
too,
we should have.
I mean, everyone's character. Obviously, Wes has gone through a gigantic change, but like your character...
Yeah, he's dead.
That's a gigantic change. In my book, that's the...
That's pretty much the biggest one.
That's the biggest change you can get through. But your character's gone from being sort of in the beginning of the show, confident but meek, and then... in a weird way, transformed into the only really reliable student in some ways for Annalise Keating. And then Wes's true love. You've been through so much and you get to this final episode and now there's some dude you know who's responsible for killing the love of your life. And what about the baby? I'm like, what are we going to do about all this stuff, you guys? There's too much to worry about right now.
There is too much to worry about. Unfortunately, I'm like, well, yeah, life, if I look back on, you know, what's happened in my year as a human being, I mean, life is like that. Like, the craziest things happen, and it's almost like when it rains, it pours, and college for me was definitely not an easy task. Of course, I didn't murder anyone, but, you know, comparably... I do think that college
That's
students nowadays, they are so much pressure on them and they have such competition. And not only that, but we have this teacher that has been able to beautifully sort of manipulate us into her way of like bending the law, which is kind of the way, you know, I come from a culture that is seen as very corrupt, but it's almost like, well, actually that exists everywhere. Just people are a lot better at bending the rules and doing it in a civilized way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Annalise Keating sort of teaches us very quickly how to do that. And like you said, falling in love with my best friend, which, you know, Laurel's best friend was Wes, and she was always looking after him. And I never thought that you guys would write the fact that they ended up becoming a couple, but it kind of made so much sense when it happened. And he's this first one who I said, I think I'm dating my father, meaning Frank. That also makes complete sense. And it's almost like her rite of passage has been, like you said, she started off being this meek, quiet one. And now I'm like, how could she ever be the quiet one? You know, now she would never be able to go back.
She's so outspoken. I mean, think about this woman staring at Connor going, why don't you just go kill yourself? The funny thing too for me is, after the whole fire and waking up, it's like Laurel 2.0. It's like Laurel who doesn't give a freaking frig about anything because she's faced death and she lost her big love.
Yeah.
It's like balls out. And this episode where you have a gun, where you're trying to entrap Charles, where that doesn't go good, so you go chasing after. That's like an amazing transformation.
Right.
For this initially seemingly cautious person.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, the hints were there, because season one, you're placing things on benches so people would find them. There was
Without
always
telling
this
anyone.
Tricky
yeah.
side that
yeah.
has really turned into this moral center in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
because like the only person in the room who's screaming, why isn't anybody worried about Wes? Now, you were surprised when they wrote the relationship, weren't you?
I was extremely surprised. because he was like my brother. So I was like, how am I going to sell this? Because I knew that once they had had us kiss in the car, I was like, we need to make this work, and it doesn't. And my job is for it to make sense to everyone, for them not to be like, you know, obviously the first time around, everyone's like, what? No, no. And then little by little, we sold a very deep relationship with very few scenes of that time with the car and us kissing, to then us becoming a couple. It was super quick to then him being killed. I knew that for it to be as big as it is, there had to be a lot more. I personally knew when I was pregnant, I knew it was going to be Wes under the sheet, unfortunately. I was like, okay, I see where this is going, and this is super sad, but I only have a few more scenes with this guy, and he's my best friend in real life as well, and it's, you know, it's going to be a really emotional process. But we were both conscious of how important these little scenes. I remember in the bed, me taking off his watch, like little things like the tub scene, the flashbacks, like all those scenes were so important because we knew we weren't going to have much more, but we didn't want to make them also, you know, it's like a normal scene. So you can't push something that isn't there. But I think the 3 years that we've spent together pretty much are the best way to rehearse a relationship. You know, we had so much time. And I think people bought much more into the Wes-Laurel relationship as after that car scene, like as time went by. And it kind of made total sense. Again, brilliance in, you know, Pete and the writers.
Yeah.
Sort of seeing the chemistry that we have in the room, which is, again, it's funny because we could all date each other because we all love each other. So they could probably write that we all have a relationship. But I think that the screen chemistry of Laurel and Wes really, really made sense, and is actually what brought Annalise closer to Laurel. And then once Wes dies, it sort of gives permission to stop apologizing. It was so freeing to just be mean to Maggie. You know, have that lash out to people in a funeral. I mean, oh man, it felt delicious, you know, to be able to, yeah, because when someone dies, you know, in real life, 5 years ago, I lost my father, and you really do feel like you're given a free card to just say what you want and you don't care about anything anymore.
Oh, yeah, no, and also the hypocrisy, which is what's so great about that scene.
Yeah.
Because it's like filled with all these students crying who didn't even know the dude.
Yeah.
And any of us who've been through a death, it's like people glob onto the drama and you're the person trying to experience it. And it's all about them looking like they're processing emotion or just avoiding you.
Yeah.
You know, which is the other big favorite, which is I'll just cross the street so I don't have to deal with you.
Yeah.
And my dad died when I was little, and I remember chasing somebody across the street, basically an adult, and going, so why don't you just say it? Like, why don't you just say it to me? Because everyone's avoiding me. So, and the creepy reactions, like, whoa, I don't know how to react to this. And then the only other people who know how to deal with it are like other people who have dead people.
Yeah.
So it's like, I love that scene because it's just like, the dream scene of standing in front of a memorial and just telling people to go shove it.
Yeah, it was my dream scene because I wish I could have done that at my dad's funeral. For sure. That's the brilliance of like acting. You get second chances at stuff that you never said or you never did. And like being in a hospital and telling like a police, like, you know, lying to a policeman or like just telling them to get out, you know, sending Maggie and saying, I'm tired. Can you leave now? I don't feel too well. Like, I wish I had those balls in real life, you know, to just say what I wanted. And I think Wes's death has given the permission for Laurel to just be like, you know what? I'm just going to, you know, hire this private investigator. I'm just going to do, you know, she's just doing things. She's going to sit to the morgue. I want to see Wes. Show me Wes's body. She's a lot less apologetic. How about when people come up to you, you know, when you've lost someone and they're like, when they make it about themselves and like, oh, once I lost my pet as well. And I totally understand what you're going through. And it's like, I lost my father. I'm sure losing Fluffy was a hard thing. And I think grief is something that people run away from. They don't know how to handle. And it's almost like it has a really bad stigma. So I think these episodes since Wes's death, the process of grief has been, I think, written very well.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. And it's super cathartic to watch. I mean, it's just, that's what's super fun about it. And you do such an amazing job. I love the scene where she makes Maggie go away because it's just,
God, it's so fun.
Like the worst freaking thing ever.
She's like, we're not friends, you know, leave. And it's just like, yeah, that's weird, leave. But I'm going to still eat the jelly you brought me. You know?
That's confident.
Yeah.
sucking down that jello, yeah, is confidence.
That scene where she goes to Wes's apartment and just opens the door and there's a shirt there. I don't know if you...
Oh, that's a heartbreaker. That is a heartbreaker.
Man, I smashed my face into my dad's clothes the day we got back from, you know, the funeral, and his closet was still fresh with his pheromones, you know? And I was literally just like... could not stop sobbing and holding, and I really felt like he was still there because of the smell. You know, it literally, smell is still alive. And going into that room, and with, you know, the director was wonderful because she allowed me to do, she knew I was going to really treat it as if I was really going, yeah, in, you know, she knew it was a very heartbreaking and like gut-wrenching scene for me, and she didn't make me do it so many times. And I happened to see like the sleeve of a shirt, and I didn't know how they were going to place the shirt in the room. And so grabbing the shirt and feeling like I was holding his hand, you know, but his hand that was no longer there. And I was just, you know, reliving, you know, those moments of when you really do, you know, all you have left of someone is their shirt or something. Yeah. It's just such a... And also because I could connect, you know, I'm losing, and I know that he's still alive and bless him, but Alfie's a person that's changed my life, like as an actress, as a person, and him leaving is so sad for all of us.
It is.
And so it was very easy to connect to the emotions of that. And I'm going to miss him, you know, tremendously. And I hope that it was really his twin, his... hashtag, it wasn't really Wes, it was his evil twin from Haiti that came back, and that's who died. Wes is alive somewhere. Wes is Wes, and
that was Les. His twin Les. Hashtag less is more. Okay, I'm going to pitch it to Pete. We'll see how that goes, right? Now, we have some fan questions. Do you mind answering some fan questions?
Not at all. I love
these are
the
some
fans.
Awesome fans.
People love your guys' show.
No, and they love you on this show, too, because you've got... what's nice about this, too, is there's some consistency, too, because there are lots of people who really, really want to know. It's exactly what we've been talking about. You know, how you feel about your character's development, which we've talked a little bit about.
Right.
Mayor Dare Gladiator. Like wrote that. Marie and Annalise Keaton.
Keaton.
Is, what is your favorite episode so far this season? I mean, we're at the end of the season, so you can pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think, at least for now, which one was the one that started with the funeral and then had me lash out at them for, you know, not caring that Wes's body was missing.
Yes.
And then me going to the morgue and finding out that he wasn't there. And then me asking Nate, I need to see his body. How would you feel if you couldn't see your wife's body? Again, relating it to my life, I couldn't see I had to go to a freezer to say goodbye to my dad. It was such a traumatic thing, and to be able to live and have like a second chance to say goodbye on a show, I know it sounds weird, but it really is like a cathartic thing for me to be able to have lived that grief so clearly. You know, when you're going through grief, you become very unpleasant, and to be able to have that written and to be able to be that unabashedly was so freeing. I have that beautiful scene with Michaela where she stays over. So I think that episode for me was full, and it was Sheree Nolan. She was a, you know, wonderful gift for me to have her direct me in that really emotional episode for me. That's my favorite episode.
That's cool. So Shreya at Scandal, that's G-A-W-M actually. So what's your favorite memory of working with Alfie?
I have so many, but I would say just what's coming up in my head right now is the amount of passion behind his defending his character, which then made me have to like fight for mine, because he would, you know, sort of demand so much from me, the director, from everyone, because he wouldn't, for example, understand a moment, right? So then I, or not understand, but he would be, you know, why would Wes do this? And if I didn't bring up the same passion of defending Laurel, like I would probably be completely forgotten. So he, without knowing, was pushing me to also, you know, stand up and say, well, you know what, this is exact. And so it's almost like we were already being the characters before even calling action. So he would demand that from me from the beginning, even before we would put hair and makeup on and we'd do rehearsal. We'd go into our trailers and read the scene over and over, and we'd do these exercises like in drama school where you just say the lines or you do these like physicality things to kind of feel the scene. And I don't feel comfortable enough to ask anyone else to do that. Like, I literally got the feeling that I don't know when it started, but Alfie and I literally would spend hours in our trailers rehearsing the scenes that we had together.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's what I'm gonna definitely miss that a lot. I don't know if it's also, you know, the Spanish aspect, the fact that we share Spanish and French. Heck, I sent him to Mexico to spend time with my family, and I didn't even go. Like, that's how close the guy is. Like, he went to San Miguel de Allende.
I remember hearing that. That's right.
So, you know, I feel like I can bring anything up, even things that I wouldn't dare to bring up with anyone else. I would bring it up with him. So that's that kind of when you feel that safe with someone, I think the acting also becomes something a lot realer.
Oh, yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Changing gears, Marcello at Mediatron wants to know, what's your favorite Mexican food?
Tamales, huevos rancheros. There's a thing, there's like a type of sope. Sope is like a tortilla that's fried with cheese and frijol, and they put grasshoppers on it. I know it sounds, have you tried it?
No, but I've heard about
You've heard about it.
Because when I was in Mexico, in the sort of central Mexico, it was really big, and grasshoppers are supposedly delicious.
Yeah, they're absolutely delicious. And it sounds awful, but I, you know, my dad forced me to eat it when I was younger, and it's a delicacy, and we absolutely love it. So I would say the grasshoppers.
So you guys, probably first time I ever heard eating grasshoppers on a podcast in all these years. And I swear, I was there, and people kept saying, it's delicious. It's like,
and did you have it?
I didn't have it. It wasn't available at the place I was in the mountains outside of Mexico City, and there was this one place where they just kept saying, oh, yeah, they're delicious. It's absolutely delicious. And I was like, good to know.
I'll bring, it's not like you just eat the, you know, the live, it's crunchy. It
was
feels
the
like
crunchy thing,
really
which
crunchy,
they were
sort salty. Chapulines, that's what they call them, chapulines. So it's like a tiny version of a grasshopper. I don't know what it's kind of like a grasshopper. I don't know what the real, you know, Alfie would know the real name. There you
Alfie
go.
Alfie would know the real
Alfie
name.
Alfie would know what a linguist he would know.
So if we called Alfie yeah. would know. Fine. Anonymous is 10101 wants to know, what are your favorite fan theories you've seen?
God,
I know.
Back in the day, I guess, okay, so crazy ass theories is that Laurel was gonna, hurt Annalise by going and like sleeping with Nate. I heard that one and I was like,
what show is this?
And I was like, and then that Connor would definitely move with Connor
Oliver.
And Oliver, yes. Yeah. Would move to Russia and like start their own, you know, life there or whatever.
Now finally, Kim at Scandal Fan NL wants to know, what attracts you to a movie or TV show? What makes you interested?
Well, for example, so the movie I'm producing and leading in right now.
What's the name of that movie?
Everybody Loves Somebody.
Everybody Loves Somebody. And when does that open?
It opened on Friday the 17th, and it was the first movie that I had read that had the life of a Mexican-American, of an immigrant, depicted in a luminous way without talking about her immigration status and talking about her family and her everyday life.
How great.
So for me, specifically that, as a producer, I was like, I want to tell more stories where immigrants are included already in the, as a citizen in the U.S. and aren't even questioned and aren't even, that subject isn't even touched upon. And not only that, coming from a very machista culture, having a woman be a professional, she's dependent, she's independent, she lives in her own house in Silver Lake, she has a diversity of patients, she's a gynecologist, she's a very successful gynecologist, but also is like confused in love and she's a mess, and she goes to visit her parents on the weekends to Ensenada, to Baja, so she comes in and out of the border, what millions of people do every day. And yet we don't see it enough on film and you know, the Oscars. Like, we don't really have any stories of either having Latinos at the forefront or talking about our everyday lives. There's nothing yet, unfortunately.
That's right.
So as a producer, that really pushed me to want to make this movie made. And with TV shows, I think what makes you sometimes want to do it is to work with people like you. And I don't want to, you know, say it, but we don't know much except for the pilot when we say yes to shows like this. You know,
It could be a horror show.
It could be really awful, and it's your entire career.
You make you guys sign up for several years.
For seven years, yeah.
For all of you don't know it, like, they come in, they've got one script to base 7 years of their life on.
Yeah.
And it's a huge leap of faith. Like, I always feel this way with the writers when we're starting to work on a show and I sit down with them and go, as we're starting to develop ideas, I'm like, okay, so in success, you have to come up with something you can live with that you think will continue to generate your interest and stimulate you and keep going for as long as people want to watch it.
For me, it was funny because when I remember getting that email from Pete and Shonda saying, do you want to make Laurel a Latina? And my instinct reaction was no. Why? because I never saw a good representation of a Latina until you know, Pete and my managers and my team said, no, but look, let me show you what, you know, Shawn Alland does with the non-stereotype of, you know,
people.
The story. Yeah, like, we're just people. So, you know, I now can talk about my gut reaction, because at first I didn't understand why I had that gut reaction. And now seeing that I do have a creative input in Laurel's story, and that we have a Latina right, you know, in the writer's room, and that we give that voice to the authenticity of the culture, as well as just, like you said, a human being and full of emotions as everyone else. I think that was something really important for me to come and be a part of, because I know that there's already not enough people doing it, but a bunch of Latins being given a platform, and I just wanted to be a part of good storytelling where Latina could also be included in that. So it is a gamble. You never know. You always, sometimes you think a thing is going to be good or bad, but it's kind of like a gut feeling where you, like you said, if you can do this in the next seven, if you can still work with these people. Luckily, I absolutely love my cast mates. I adore them. I'm actually, that's what terrifies me the most, is the day where we're all going to have to say goodbye and I'm going to have to go work with a bunch of strangers. So
we're trying to keep that from happening.
Okay.
Because well, I hate change too. So it's like, oh, for God's sakes, you guys, don't go anywhere. Because this is, jeez.
I know.
Thank you so much for taking time off your day off and coming in. And everybody else who's listening to this, check out this film because it's awesome. And who doesn't like a good romantic comedy that's got a little meat to it, you know?
Yeah.
For everyone who's listening, so you know, TGIT is going to take a little break for this special mini-series event, which is called When We Rise. And this chronicles the real-life, personal, and political struggles, setbacks, and triumphs of a diverse family of LGBT men and women who helped pioneer one of the last legs of the U.S. civil rights movements. So you should check that out. It's going to be on ABC instead of the TGIT lineup. But we are going to return on Thursday, March 9th. It's not that far away.
No.
Like within spitting distance, I would say. We're pretty good. With a Grey's Anatomy at 8 o'clock and Scandal at 9 o'clock. And the season premiere of season 2 of The Catch, which is at 10 o'clock, where How to Get Away with Murder was. We've got the delightful show The Catch, which if you did not check it out last season, you really need to check it out this season. I'm just going to tell you, you don't have to have seen last season to really enjoy this season. You can catch up really, really quickly.
But then we do previously on for you guys that take like 6 hours. Yeah, previously
because there's so much stuff.
10 hours.
10 hours of and they just keep playing that music over and over and over again. It's hysterical. Well, you don't even need to do this with The Catch because all you need to know is Alice Vaughn, who's played by Mira Enos, and Peter Krause, who plays Benjamin Jones, and they have a cat and mouse relationship like nothing you've ever seen. The show's super fun. It is a delightful thing to sit and watch at 10 o'clock after watching Grey's Anatomy and Scandal. You will really enjoy it. So please, please try to tune in on March 9th at 10 o'clock on ABC to check out The Catch. You don't want to miss any of this. So watch, just mark your calendars. So thanks again to EW.com for posting an exclusive first listen of the podcast. And thanks to all of you for listening. And especially those of you who've subscribed to this podcast at itunes.com/Shondaland. So we'll be back again with another new podcast in 2 weeks with another special guest from TGIT. So until then, this is Betsy Beer saying stay safe and we will talk soon. Bye-bye.